billions of dollars to try to disprove the Bible. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow panelist and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
As always, Barry, it's good to be back with you. Start out another week, and hopefully we've got an interesting topic for the folks out there in WLRY land.
Well, yes, we do, as a matter of fact. You know, Chuck, it's one of those things that sometimes when we're talking about all these things like fiscal cliffs and budget impasses and standoffs and trillions of dollars in debt, that something like a few billion dollars doesn't seem like a whole lot. But it is a whole lot if you understand what the underlying theological implications of spending a few billion dollars on certain projects really are. Take, for example, funding for NASA. Yes, that's right. All the astronauts from Gus Grissom to John Glenn to your favorite astronaut you had when you were a kid. NASA has got its own mystique, its own certain mystery, its wow factor, its hero worship. But really, Chuck, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, is another unconstitutional federal program. And this unconstitutional federal program, although we've probably seen a number of interesting innovations that have been developed in the space program over the last 60 years, what we've really seen is, especially in the modern NASA movement, is the spending of billions and billions, and I say that with a B because I have a cold and so I may not be sounding correct, but billions with a B, billions of taxpayer dollars to basically do one thing, Chuck, to basically say that the Bible is not true.
Yeah, that's exactly what NASA is working on.
Well, there can be no. And some will, and I can hear some people yelling from the rooftops now, how can you say that? They're doing great things and the International Space Station, and I can go on and on and on. But really, honestly, let's just be quite honest, ladies and gentlemen, when you peel back the layers of this onion, what you get is an unapologetic attack upon biblical truth.
Oh, absolutely. Now, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. There has been some things that NASA does that are absolutely indispensable. For instance, there are
one of them, right?
NASA started out as a quasi-defense agency, if you will. The whole purpose of the experimentation was to do things like develop ways to get satellites into orbit and to do early space exploration and that kind of thing. You know, the church has been guilty in the past of saying some things that were exceedingly silly. I worked with a guy who was considerably older than I was. I think he was about my age now, and I was about 35. So he was about 20 years older than I was. And he had gone to Calvin College in the early 1960s. And he left Calvin College when he took a physics class, and the physics professor said that we would never really explore outer space because that's where God lives, and he wouldn't allow it. Now, I kind of grasp that, why he left that. I mean, that is a very Luddite-type thing to say. Of course we're going to be, you know, God lives everywhere. He doesn't live in outer space. It's not his house, and he's not going to protect himself from invasion by not allowing us to explore space. He has put great distances between bodies to make it difficult. And I don't think God objects to us looking at things and learning things. What he objects to is doing it by force. So in other words, I got into a discussion on the internet the other day with a guy, and we were talking about these Mars missions, and I said, look, this is a waste. This is a waste of taxpayer money. And this guy said, hey, this is about exploration. And I go, look, I have no problem with exploration. It's a noble cause. If you want to participate in space exploration, give all the money you can to that kind of thing. Stop forcing me to pay for it. This is exactly what I mean by being a coercive agency. NASA requires me, through the auspices of the federal government, to give them money for something which I receive little or no tangible benefit. Now, how can I say that when things like really fast computers and cheap TVs and, you know, VCRs and blah, blah, blah came from NASA research? Well, first of all, most of that didn't come from direct NASA research. Fast computers and things we would have gotten eventually without the space program. People were working on, IBM was working on miniaturization. Other companies were working on miniaturization of computers. And eventually we would have gotten there. Would we be there now? Well, maybe not. Maybe. It's hard to tell. Remember that the Defense Department also brings requirement for miniaturization and electronics that will operate under all kinds of adverse conditions. And, well, okay, we may not have gotten Tang. When was the last time you drank Tang? Well, it's probably been a while. I haven't even seen Tang on a shelf anyplace in a while, although I'm sure it's still made. Just to let you folks know, Barry Sheets has had some technical difficulties, so he's had to drop out of this conversation. So I'm going to finish up today's show on my own. But my whole point is that as a Christian, I'm not against space exploration at all. I think it's cool. I was one of the first kids on the block to build models of spaceships. I built an entire Saturn V rocket complete with the lunar module and the whole thing that popped open and you could see the whole operation, how the thing worked. When the Apollo 13 near disaster happened, I knew exactly what had happened when they explained it to me because I'd built the model. So I've been involved in some of that hero worship in NASA, but now that I'm an adult, I can see that NASA is sort of lost track of what its original function was. And remember, we talked about it being a quasi-defense agency. The idea was to get satellites into space to be able to allow the Defense Department to do quick communications and have communications if it failed on Earth. If we had atmospheric problems with standard radio transmission methods, then you could do satellite communication and that kind of thing. So I get that. That also may be redundancy. That's an argument for another show. But what we were talking about, of course, is the idea that this is kind of a boondoggle. And what is happening at NASA right now is this is an agency in crisis. The only thing they've got going for them right now really is their extraplanetary, their only real PR things are their extraplanetary missions. And by that, we mean things like the Mars landers. And we're going to be discussing today an article, and we'll probably still be discussing it tomorrow, but an article by Gary North, who is an economist and also something of a theologian. And Gary North has written an article that's been posted over at his blog site, The Tea Party Economist, and also co-posted at lourockwell.com. We don't talk too much about stuff that goes on at lourockwell.com. Occasionally an article comes up that's very interesting, and this was one of them. So you can find it either place. We'll post a link to it when it comes time to post this on our website. But we're going to be discussing an article called The Martian Boondoggles. Now, basically, if you've been paying attention at all on the latest Mars mission, it has been highly successful. They've had some issues with some recent previous Mars missions where landers have crashed and operated for a few days and then stopped. But they've had some other rather spectacular missions, and this latest mission has been, they're getting a lot of data out of it. Well, again, that's very interesting, and my scientific side is saying that's all very interesting. But as we noted before, NASA's entire thing right now is to attempt to disprove the biblical idea that man is alone in the universe. In other words, Earth is the center of God's focus for life. Now, there has been a recent flap having to do with NASA and Caltech, California Institute of Technology. A Caltech scientist said something, basically let the cat out of the bag, that something big is about to be announced about life on Mars. Now, NASA is saying that that's not true. This is not shocking. This is a technique that NASA has been using for years to try to get more congressional money for space exploration. And this is the idea, especially on Mars, that Mars might be friendly for life. Well, there are a number of problems with this. But NASA is now saying, well, that's not really true. We've done this, we've done that, we've done another thing, but we haven't really found anything that leads us to think that there may be life, but we're still looking, and we found some indirect evidence that Mars may have been friendly for life at some point. Basically, they're looking in a crater, Mars Gale Crater. And the Curiosity rover, which is the currently operating rover on Mars. Here's a quote from the accompanying explanation from NASA. The Mars Science Laboratory Project and its Curiosity rover are less than 4 months into a 2-year prime mission to investigate whether condition in Mars' Gale Crater may have been favorable for microbial life. That's an important consideration, microbial life. Curiosity is exceeding all expectations for a new mission. Again, here we go. Curiosity is exceeding all expectations for a new mission. With all of the instruments and measurement systems performing well, NASA says. Gary North hits the nail on the head with this sentence. Microbial life is the key. It has been the key to tens of billions spent on this boondoggle for 15 years. There are no reports about findings that do not discuss water or the absence of water or the possibility of water. Why? Because water is basic for life. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. No water on Mars, no life. It can't happen. Now, we're told that, quote, the mission already has found an ancient riverbed on the Red Planet, and there is every expectation for remarkable discoveries still to come. Gary Norris says, excuse me, a riverbed? As in, quote unquote, river? As in, quote unquote, water? Well, no. There is no sign of water. But hey, let's call it a riverbed anyway. What's the harm? How do they know it's a riverbed? There's no water in it. The idea, I think, is that it resembles what dry riverbeds look like on Earth. There is a problem with this. There is weather on Earth, and even dry riverbeds are subject to the erosion and the changes brought about by weather. Mars doesn't seem to have much weather except for dust storms in a very thin atmosphere. That's about it. So saying that they found a riverbed is, to say the least, disingenuous. What they may have discovered, possibly, is the remnants of a, let's say, a comet hit Mars. Since it has a very thin atmosphere, there's nothing to burn up, or there's very little to burn up a comet that would fall through the atmosphere of Mars. And let's say that it impacted Mars, and any time a large body has an impact on another large body, a huge amount of heat is released. And let's say that that comet melted, or that fragment of a comet melted, and some of the water flowed away from the impact area. Does that make it a river? Well, temporarily, until that water evaporates. And unfortunately on Mars, that's a highly likely event because it has a very low atmospheric pressure. There's nothing to keep the water from evaporating away. And even if it's exceedingly cold, I'm going to bring up something from physics known as sublimation. Sublimation is the process by which even ice will move from the solid state, which ice is, directly into the gaseous state. In other words, it will move from ice to steam under the right pressure conditions, which is low pressure, and some heat applied, the heat from the impact. So that ice, some of it can turn to water, float away, and eventually evaporated by sublimation, or just by mere evaporation into a very thin atmosphere where it would do nothing. It might accumulate in certain areas and freeze because Mars tends to be very cold. There are all kinds of things militating against the possibility of life on Mars. I can't say with any degree of certainty that life on Mars is impossible. That would be a silly statement to make. I can't say that. But what I can tell you is that NASA is fairly certain that there's no life on Mars for one very good reason. Mars has no magnetosphere. Now, the Earth has an iron core, and it spins, and Earth is a magnetic entity, and it has magnetic fields around it. And those magnetic fields are very important to life, surprise, surprise, because what they do is they stop certain kinds of cosmic radiation and high-energy particles from hitting the Earth. In other words, we're protected from radiation, both from the sun and from cosmic rays, by this magnetosphere that captures these particles. When you see an aurora borealis, it is particles that have come from the sun, generally from some kind of high-energy outburst, that have been captured in the magnetosphere of the Earth. And those particles, as they are dissipate their energy, they glow. Well, that glow is a reminder that God has protected the Earth by capturing those particles so that we are not bombarded with these high-energy particles that would kill us. This is an important consideration that NASA doesn't want to talk about. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're about out of time for today's show, and we're going to discuss this. We're going to try to get Barry's equipment back up and running, and we're going to discuss other implications. We've just barely touched the surface of this article. So we'll be back tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.